The Crude Life with Jason Spies.
Welcome back to Super Talk 1270. This is Talk of the Town. My name is Jason Spies, sitting in today as your special guest host. We are going to hand off the microphone here in just a second to Jason Bohr, Jonathan Fortner, and bring in Mike Holmes on the phone to talk a little bit about some research and development and lignite energy. Jason Bohr, of course, the president of the Lignite Energy Council, Jonathan Fortner with communications over there, and Mike Holmes with research and development. Gentlemen, are you ready? All righty. Well, you know, they just got done talking with Senator Jessica Bell Unruh. So now that they're ready to go, let's hand off the mic.
Thanks, and we are back. We just concluded discussing coal policy with Senator Jessica Unruh Bell and Jonathan Fortner of the Lignite Energy Council. We now bring on Mike Holmes, who is our Vice President of Research and Development here at the Lignite Energy Council. One of the things, Mike, that Senator Bell talked about was the future of carbon capture, sequestration, utilization, and storage as it pertains to Coal Creek. That is a part of the puzzle for the future. So what does carbon capture role play in the future of Coal Creek? And how did it get to that point where that's a possibility for the future?
Oh, sure. Great question. And, you know, the carbon capture aspect is something that gets looked at heavier and heavier and becomes more problematic in other areas of the nation. But North Dakota's got so much going for it. So the quick, more global answer is it's just a way, a topic where we carry on that team approach. And not only the team approach, the reasons why it works is beyond just the team approach into we have the great geology, we have the incredible workforce with the innovative spirit, and so we've got just a great opportunity in our region to, as part of carbon management, include carbon capture, carbon storage, with our geology, and eventually in some of these cases we'll be also looking at carbon utilization because of our demand for carbon in the enhanced oil recovery space. But for Coal Creek, the initial look is at storage of the CO2 we capture in geologic formation. So with that, I think, Jason, are you also wanting to lead into some of the project areas that we focused on?
Yeah, so that would be kind of the next question, because all of that leads back into the research program that the state of North Dakota has that is one of its unique strengths in funding transformational research. So what has been the role of research and development and the state in laying that groundwork for a project like Coal Creek's carbon capture?
All right, great. You know, I may be slightly biased after 35 years in the technology space, but it plays an incredible role. I mean, we were leaders in solving problems related to other emissions, SOx, mercury for sure, you know, was a challenge for Western coals, and North Dakota led the way. And so we continue that leadership in the area of CO2 management, carbon capture, and then carbon utilization and storage. And one of the things people don't realize through the EERC Plain CO2 Reduction Partnership Program, which we funded, we were probably the initial funding source in that was through the Lignite Research Program. That's been going on for a couple of decades now, and that has really set the stage for understanding the geology and addressing some of those uncertainties that you need to address in order to get to that commercialization. And now we're looking at technology that has been demonstrated down at Houston at Petranova. We're looking at much larger scale application at two sites, one being Coal Creek, the other being the Milton R. Young Station for Tundra. And we're looking at the colder climate, the larger scale. So briefly on the project side, more recently, we've had a project under Carbon Safe Program is what it's called, where we've focused on the geology. We've also supported the Midwest Ag Energy Project for looking at storage directly at the site. And then we've also funded and participated in their effort for a preliminary engineering and design study. And more recently, They're finishing up their more focused engineering and design study to get a better handle on the design, the economics, and address some of those uncertainties.
Mike, can you explain, you know, we run into a lot of people that, you know, may or may have not have even heard of what carbon capture is. There are different types of applications that people are talking about, if they are aware. But on a lignite coal power plant, could you just briefly explain how would a carbon capture unit work?
So that is really a fun topic. So this next answer will be about 8 hours. So, I'll give you the 1 minute version. The technology that's got the most headway commercially is using a liquid solvent to capture the CO2. And the reason that is the leader out there is because we've been using what's called amine solvents in an industry for over six decades. So now it's applying it to coal-fired flue gas. And so that's the technology where you grab up the CO2 with this liquid, and then you use some steam from the steam cycle to peel that CO2 off in a concentrated source then. And then that CO2 can be compressed and pumped underground and stored in our incredible geology.
So why has it taken so long for that technology to take off, Mike? Because what you're talking about, you know, those amines have been in use for decades. Walk us through why the timeline has been extended on this. What did that amine technology start out doing, and how has it changed to the point where you're applying it to a 1,000-megawatt power plant?
Yeah, so there's the key part of that answer is a 1,000-megawatt power plant. So you have a gas processing facility, which has been a historic use, and your product stream is worth a lot of money. And it's very small volume that you're treating. So in this case, we have to go through that long process of improving the economics for a large scale flue gas with the impurities specific to North Dakota lignite. And you have to look at the economics totally different, the impurities in the gas stream and how they're gonna impact the operation differently. So there was a lot of testing that went on to get to the point to reduce those uncertainties, improve the confidence, and that's just the technology front. You all know about the permitting, the regulation, and then another key thing that with a lot of support from our federal delegation in North Dakota as again leaders, we ended up with the 45Q tax program that allows $50 per ton of every ton of CO2 stored. So there are just a lot of aspects that pertain to the answer of that question that go even beyond technology.
So Mike, you know, I hear the question quite a bit as I talk to just, you know, regular people that, you know, that say, you know, what's going on in the coal industry, right? Is there a future? Can we get there? Or, you know, what's the plan for when they all shut down, right? I mean, it's a very polarizing topic depending on, you know, where you're at in the country and who you're talking to. But one of the things I like to say is, you know, there are a ton of benefits that a coal plant produces, right? A reliable electricity, affordable electricity, the jobs, the impact to the economics of the community and the state, all of the livelihoods that it influences, right? And the only negative you ever hear is, okay, well, it's carbon dioxide pollution. And I think it gets a little bit overstated, you know, of how, you know, people don't understand how clean those plants are from where they were decades ago. And the industry does not get the credit it does deserve for the improvements it has made. But, you know, the other thing is, okay, well, gosh, why would industry want to do carbon capture, right? I mean, I was in fifth grade science class, and I learned about photosynthesis. I know that carbon dioxide is one of those things that help plants grow, helps the ag community and all those things. But I guess, you know, the short version is, you know, we're taking essentially a waste product from the plant and trying to monetize it so it makes business sense. It helps lengthen the life of a coal plant and the investment, but it also takes care of, you know, kind of the other concerns from people that don't like coal is, okay, well, if we address carbon dioxide emissions and we greatly reduce them, you know, up to 90%, then your concern should be taken care of, right? And sometimes that's not the case, and we see where people are. But, you know, what is it quickly would you say, you know, of why industry should be doing carbon capture?
Yeah, in North Dakota, the answer is quite different than other places because, yeah, initially, most of our carbon capture projects that are going forward are looking at storage of the CO2 in deep saline formations that are just perfect. And you got to remember, people think of the CO2 as a gas. It's storing like a liquid. It's behaving like a liquid down there at those depths. And so we've got incredible geology. And if you look at the long run, we've got the Bakken that's maturing to the point eventually where we're going to need that CO2 to continue to grow our oil production in the state. And while we're growing that oil with the CO2 for enhanced oil recovery, we're storing CO2. So you've got several different angles you can start to address that question with, Jonathan. Everything from financing and insurance rates are being impacted by scores that include your CO2 footprint. So it addresses those questions and concerns and allows these incredible assets that we have on the prairie in North Dakota. It protects them and sustains their operation many decades forward. So that's one of the reasons that utilities are looking at it, is all those reasons you mentioned, because in order to enable technologies that are intermittent, you need that solid baseload. And then my favorite answer is every industry in the state and region relies on that low-cost, dependable power to give it that economic advantage when competing with other regions. We need that baseload power. It's the cornerstone of our whole economy.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you joining us this morning and your expertise. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Bye now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mike Holmes, Jonathan Fortner, and Jason Bohrer with the Lignite Energy Council. My name is Jason Spies. We're going to take a brief pause. When we come back, there is going to be more. Welcome back to Super Talk 1270. My name is Jason Spies, your special guest host today here on Talk of the Town. And we're going to head over to the Lignite Energy Council. And we're going to talk with Jason Bohrer, Jonathan Fortner, and special guest Jessica Unruh Bell. She's a state senator. Folks, you're going to want to stick around for this interview. I'm going to hand the microphone right off to Mr. Jason Bohrer. Go ahead, sir.
All right, we're here. I'm Jason Bohrer with the Lignite Energy Council. With me is Jonathan Fortner, also of the Lignite Energy Council. And with us is Senator Jessica Unruh Bell, who is our guest this morning. And we're here to talk about what is going on in the coal industry, North Dakota, and beyond. Thank you for joining us, Senator Bell.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a beautiful day to be a coal miner in North Dakota right now. Wonderful celebration on May 2nd out at Coal Creek Station, and I'm happy to be here talking to you all about it.
It's one of the most unprecedented things that has happened in the North Dakota coal world and in the national coal world for as long as we can remember. But it started out a couple of years ago on a much different note. Tell us about your reaction to the news when the Coal Creek announcement was made that it might shut down, and what was the process that happened after that?
Oh boy, I remember sitting in an interim committee meeting in energy development and transmission and hearing from Great River Energy about their plans as we look to the future. And growing concern in the community. I think that's one of the things that I talked about when Great River came that day to committee, just wondering what their future held. And that uncertainty is something that we've been dealing with in the coal industry since, you know, Obama declared the war on coal back in 2008. And so to really have that, we'd really staved off. We do such a great job with our regulatory environment here in North Dakota. We had staved off so many of the other attacks that have been coming. They're like, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts for the coal industry. And so to have it hit home like that was just, it really, it caused a lot of unrest back in 2020 in not only in the community affected by Coal Creek Station and the wonderful communities of Underwood and Washburn and Riverdale and everybody surrounding, but also in Beulah and Hazen, where I reside. Everybody felt that that shock wave that got sent through the system. And so we knew immediately it was time to get to work. And so that's exactly what we did. We started talking to all the utilities, trying to hear what it is that they were looking for with their baseload power to see if there was some wiggle room to try and find somebody to take over part ownership of the facility. And then all of a sudden, Rainbow Energy came into the picture. It's a really long story, and it's been a really long ride here, but we're here, and May 2nd has now happened, and it's traded hands.
So, Jessica, you are the youngest senator in the North Dakota State Senate.
Yes.
You're the only senator that represents all of coal country. So what kind of pressure did you feel put on your shoulders when you heard that announcement and knowing, I mean, it can't be understated, if a plant of that size, which is the largest plant in the state of North Dakota, the plant and the associated mine were to shut down, I mean, the devastating impact, this is unlike, you know, any other situation. If a business was to close or leave in a city or a town somewhere else, it wouldn't be as devastating, right? Like, it's on a whole different scale that I just don't know that people understand. But as the state senator that represents that area and who has grown up there, who knows the people, understands it, I mean, what kind of pressure did you feel, and what, you know, how did that motivate you? And we can get into kind of things that you did, but just take us through, what does that feel like?
The hardest conversation I had to have was with a very close friend of mine who is a Falkirk employee. And I wanted to make sure that they heard it from me, and they weren't the only ones, but I wanted to make sure that they heard the news from the horse's mouth instead of in the newspaper, because these things just could devastate the way of lives of so many families in the district. And so having some of those really hard conversations at first, there were a lot of tears, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I've ever experienced that kind of a widespread turmoil in our communities or in my life before. But, you know, if we took a step back, really, and looked at what was happening across the country, you see these coal-fired power plants shutting down. And so we had a lot of community members that really believed that it really was going to shut down. And for a while, I wasn't sure that we were going to be able to do anything about it. And so when I look back on this experience, that period where we just did not see how we could find a pathway forward, those were the sleepless nights. Those were, I loved like my 1 to 5 a.m. in the morning kind of time frame, trying to think of different things that we could do. But again, once Rainbow Energy stepped up to the plate and said, hey, we want to take a look at this. We think we see a pathway to success here. And we want to do something that's never been done before. And that's what this company has done, is they've come in and they'll be an independent power producer who can get the electrons from the facility to the places they need to go. That's what they do. That's their craft. And so knowing that these guys were coming to the table, they knew how to get the electricity to the markets where they needed to go and made a commitment to CCUS in the process. It was, I think, also very hard to know those details and not be able to share a lot of that early on, too, because you've got these tumultuous times and you know things could be happening. But there was a really long time period in there, too, where things just couldn't be talked about, couldn't be shared, because there really was still no certainty. We had somebody there, but we just weren't quite sure how to get it across the finish line. And so getting it across the finish line and being able to celebrate on May 2nd has been something that we have been looking forward to, well, for years now.
So you mentioned that there's folks who saw coal plants closing across the country and, you know, they thought this is going to happen here. What does North Dakota bring to the table? Why did it work here when it hasn't worked elsewhere? You're in a unique position as a coal miner and as a legislator to see what North Dakota has to offer. So why was it possible here?
It was possible here because we are North Dakota. We've got a lot of people who were involved in this across the country. And I heard on May 2nd at the celebration so many times, this could never be done anywhere else. This could only happen here in North Dakota. And that's number one because of the people who live here. Not only are, I think our population is just a kind, wonderful pack of humans here. And anybody who moves here says that. There are a lot of people that move here and stay because of the people who reside here. But but also just that that sense of family and community spreads beyond our families and communities. So when it comes to our legislative work, legislators stepped up to the plate, whether they lived in coal country or not. And while I really helped lead the pack on what all of our regulatory environment should look like, I couldn't have done it without everybody else stepping up to the plate.
Thank you very much, Senator Jessica Unruh Bell. We're going to take a brief pause. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with the Lignite Energy Council, Senator Jessica Unruh Bell. We've got Jason Borer, Jonathan Fortner from the Lignite Energy Council. My name is Jason Spies. I'm the special guest host today here on Super Talk 1270. This is Talk of the Town. Welcome back to Super Talk 1270. My name is Jason Spies, special guest host today on Talk of the Town. We're going to head back to the Lignite Energy Council where Jason Borer, Jonathan Fortner, and special guest Senator Jessica Unruh Bell are talking about clean energy, clean coal, and that big sale that happened this week, Coal Creek. Plus, much, much more. Let's hand it off to Jason Borer.
And we're back with Senator Jessica Unruh Bell and Jonathan Fortner, who are discussing some of the events in the coal industry over the past few weeks and what leads us to an unprecedented event on May 2nd, where Coal Creek Station was transferred to its new owner, Rainbow Energy. And Jonathan and Senator Bell are discussing a little bit the legislation that happened behind the scenes this past session.
So, Senator, you know, as the we heard last segment, you know, of kind of your take of being the legislator from the district and what the community response was in industry. I know over at the Lignite Energy Council, you know, we were also very concerned, right? This is the biggest coal plant in North Dakota. It's one of our multiple members that have a large stake in that, and trying to figure out, you know, what is our role as a trade association to work with legislators and everyone else to try and make, you know, how could we turn lemons into lemonade, I guess is the best way to say it. So I remember that there was a lot of work pre-session, and I know that you and I had a lot of conversations going into session. I know you were working on ideas. I know we had kind of worked together and coordinated some ideas and just threw things out there and said, hey, how can we make this work? So I remember talking to you pre-session, and you had a robust package of here's what I'm going to do to kind of fight for the cause and figure out a way that this doesn't happen to another plant. And what could we do, if anything, through the legislature to make it that it changed the economics? So if there was a willing partner to come by and take that plant into the future, that they would have some tools to work with, because we're talking about a plant that is significant investment. Right, I mean, the amount of money over a 40-year plus operating plant is hundreds of millions of dollars, if not a billion, to keep that operating and to improve it and whatnot. So, as we went into session, there was, you know, we were hearing from the governor's office, lieutenant governor, from all kinds of people. Hey, what can we do? We want to help. In order to get a bill passed, you need a champion. There has to be somebody that understands the content, that knows what this bill does, how it fits, but then has to take that and run with it and work within their caucus, within the, you know, their legislative body where you are in the Senate. I mean, can you talk a little bit about, as I mean, you had big ideas. What was that like as you were trying to rally support amongst these ideas? And we can get into the details, but...
No, I think you described it well, Jonathan, and it's a little cheesy and corny, but I felt very much going into the last session that I was put in the position I was in for a purpose, and that could all come to fruition in the last legislative session because I had spent the last 8 years in the legislature building relationships with my colleagues and becoming somebody that people would go to when they had questions about energy, specifically coal, because I feel very much like that is the task for our district now, especially after redistricting. We've got almost every coal-fired facility in the state in our legislative district. And so knowing and seeing that, and then not only we talked earlier about the support that everybody at home was asking for and needing, and this tumultuous feeling that was in all of our communities, those legislators at the Capitol were feeling it too, as well as legislative leadership. Representative Pollard and Leader Wardner over in the Senate were just so supportive of what it is that we needed to do, but they didn't know what we needed to do. They looked to me to make sure, and to the Lignite Energy Council, to make sure that we had every tool available to our industry on the table. And conservative Republicans, which most of our caucuses, both in the House and the Senate, are, means that we should have, very limited government intervention here on this. And so trying to strike that balance of providing tools and also providing as little government intervention as possible was really a difficult needle to thread. But first, we had to identify what it was that industry needed, what we needed to get this deal across the table. But then, like you mentioned, also all of the other facilities, make sure that what we did didn't do any harm to any other facility, but also bolstered the rest of them, because we needed to make sure that Coal Creek Station stayed open so there wasn't a domino effect like we've seen in other states. And so it was, there were a lot of moving pieces there, especially at the beginning, but those 8 years of experience helped help me understand how to, lobby my caucus members to get them supportive, to get them to introduce some legislation that we had come up with, because one person cannot do it all. And so it was really important to spread that work out. And there were so many people that stepped up to the plate, given the situation that we were in. But also, we needed to make sure that we were doing it the right way.
And that's one of the things that I appreciate about your approach during the last legislative session is this. Coal Creek was looming over the session and over the communities, but the legislative session was not about Coal Creek only. You made the entire industry stronger and you strengthened all of those communities. And I don't think that happens without somebody who comes from those communities and has a broader knowledge. The response to the Coal Creek was not just about Coal Creek. It was about North Dakota and the economy in general. So the approach really made a lot of sense. I appreciate how you looked after that.
And to just dovetail off what Jason said, for our listeners, the coal industry in North Dakota, and we have run economic studies through North Dakota State University. And what we found out is it's $5.7 billion economic impact in the region, the coal industry. It's 14,000 direct and indirect jobs. It's hundreds of millions of tax dollars, local, state, federal, if you talk about all the employees. It's just such a large, I think we're the fifth largest industry in the state. And as anything, a lot of consumers don't exactly know where things come from, right? I mean, there's a famous saying that our friend Ron Ness at the Petroleum Council always says that I love to parrot, is that we are a producer state and then there are consumer states. So when you have a plant like Coal Creek sending 100% of its power to Minnesota, the folks on that end, do they care where it comes from? Some do, but they may not understand everything it takes to produce that power that's reliable and affordable and all of those things. So it's the impact of this plant and the industry as a whole cannot be understated of what it means in North Dakota. But if we could just dial in on a couple of the legislative bills, and I think, Senator Bell, you had, was it 20 or more pieces of legislation this last session that got passed and signed into law? And I think you didn't mention it, but I will. You are the past chair of the Senate Energy Committee. You are the current chair of the Senate Tax Committee, so you are in a leadership role on very complex subject matter where members of your caucus do turn to you to say, hey, Senator Bell, can you explain this to me? I'm not really sure, you know, what this does. And then you are also the interim chair of the Energy Committee as well, leading, which we've got another hearing coming up here in a week or two. But on some of these bills, there was a tax bill, you know, dealing with coal conversion taxes. What exactly did that do?
So the coal conversion tax bill was something that we talked extensively about. Just like we here in our communities too. I had a wonderful conversation with a farmer in my district this morning on the drive into town, and he was telling me about the drought and all of the things that our agricultural producers are experiencing right now. And I know this firsthand. My family runs 500 head of cattle, and we face all of these challenges, and we want help. And by we, I mean just the people in general, whether it's the agricultural community or the energy industry. We want help, but we don't want handouts. And so I think that was... again, back to that difficult needle to thread, we wanted to relieve some of the pressure that our industry was feeling when they went to go sell the power on the market. But we also wanted to make sure that we weren't subsidizing things here in North Dakota. And so that's where the tax relief package came in. When we can provide tax relief, whether it's income tax relief, property tax relief, or tax relief to industry to help get our product to the market, we should. And so that's what we saw here, was an opportunity to allow further success for our industry to be able to get their product to market.
And I know, because we were testifying multiple times on this bill and lobbying different legislators, and I know one of the things that we would say is, the pressures that the coal industry in North Dakota are facing are mostly federal or market-based, and it's a lot of a skewed market that was either tax subsidies for competing energy resources, just heavy-handed regulations. So our message to North Dakotans who serve in the legislature was, what can Team North Dakota do, to more level the playing field so our industries can continue to thrive, because we know what works best. So this coal conversion bill is a tax that a utility pays for every megawatt, kilowatt that they produce that goes onto the grid. It's money that they pay to the state for something that they produce. So what was being asked for was, can we take a 5-year tax holiday, is the technical term, from paying that, to help bridge the gap from difficult economic circumstances today to whatever that next thing is, which we think carbon capture is something. And I know you had a couple bills on carbon capture. If you want to mention those.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you make a really good point there. Trying to identify those pieces that are within the state's control to be able to help in situations like this is what, 8 years of experience can help with. So not only did we provide some additional tax reforms for allowing carbon capture, commercialization, and storage, but we also looked at different ways we could provide some relief with the cost of insurance. We've got skyrocketing insurance prices right now, been experiencing those in the industry, but also in the private sector too, for about since 2018. And so we did a study on that. I actually have a meeting with our insurance commissioner later today to talk about what the results of that study are. And I think there are a couple of tools that the state can use as we look to the future on that. We also wanted to make sure that we kept looking to the future. So we had research and development funding that we put in front of the legislature. That's something that we've been doing for a very long time, and I think we need to continue doing into the future.
So I kind of got about a minute left on in this segment before we got to go to break. So what does the future look like now when you're looking out in the next 5 to 10 years for Coal Creek?
Well, for Coal Creek specifically, I think the economic development, this Coal Creek project has been called the largest economic development project in the state, and I think that nothing could be more accurate. The opportunity that they have in McLean County to grow this facility and really turn it into something extraordinarily special is just endless. Last session, we also passed a sales tax exemption for large data centers, and we've also done things to kind of protect and allow for building different types of projects around facilities like this to help us not only be able to sell our product out of state, but to use it here.
We're going to conclude, Senator Bell, with a presentation to you of our Lignite Luminary Award. This is our highest legislative honor from the Lignite Energy Council, and it is in recognition of the hard work, the burden that was placed on your shoulders, how well you did it for your district, for the people of North Dakota, for the coal industry. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you. This is a wonderful thing for the district. I'm really happy to receive it on their behalf.